Manche Kopfetübis, ja. Who knows the title of today's talk or presentation? Anyone know? Yes. Yeah, almost. It's got to do with the word piteously. Finding piteously. Now, that's the kind of title that doesn't tell anything about what the presentation is going to be about. But it has, this presentation has its beginning in something very innocent. But before I explain that, I'll ask one more question. And it's a question that is probably will be very easy for everyone to answer. Who would like to be a millionaire, have $1 million? Yes, some people had no problem immediately raising their hand. No, some people don't want to be millionaires. Oh, okay. How about a billionaire? Just think of all the service you could do with $1 billion. Just think of it. But then again, of course, who would like to be a spiritual billionaire? Ah, yes. What I would like to say is that spiritual billionaireism, to become a spiritual billionaire, doesn't happen like that. It can. It can, just by mercy. But it usually doesn't happen in an instant. What happens is that one has to work very hard and collect one jewel of spiritual realization after another, after another. One has to dig and dig and dig and mine this world. This is actually the purpose of the material world. We criticize the material world. It is dukkhalayam, shashvatam, anityam, sukham, lokam. It is a miserable place, but actually, it is a great minefield. It is an explosive minefield, but it's also a field which is a mine of very valuable jewels. And our job in life, the great challenge of life, is to find one jewel after another of spiritual realization. And then gradually, and of course how seriously we search for these jewels has something to do with how quickly we will acquire them. Seriously, not how frantically and frenetically, but how seriously, how much we actually seriously want to find spiritual jewels. This has something to do with how quickly we will become spiritual billionaires. And what does it mean to be a spiritual billionaire? Maybe different persons will have their different ideas, but I think everyone who is sitting here now has very much a similar idea. What does it mean to be a spiritual billionaire? Yes. Yes, Krishna Prem. In any particular mood? Yes, what is that? It has to do with Vrindavan and learning to love Krishna as the residents of Vrindavan love Krishna and serve Krishna, love him completely. Now, what does this have to do with finding piteously? What does the word piteously mean? It's not a common word. I don't think I've ever used it in my entire life. What does piteously mean? Professor? Piteously, what does it mean? Deep compassion.
Piteously means invoking.
Yes, exactly. That's the exact word that I used. Actions. Acting in such a way that evoke compassion in another person. In Sanskrit, the word is karuna, karuna bhav. It evokes mercy. It pulls upon one's heart. So what does pity, finding piteously mean? What, we know what piteously means. Now, where do we find piteously? I'll tell you how this class came about, this presentation. During the year, earlier in the year, I was giving classes on the first and second canto of the Bhagavatam. And I was giving classes, one class was on the 10th chapter of the first canto. And in that class, there was one of Prabhupada's purports. And in it, it described a particular mood that really struck me, that was so important in our finding, becoming devotees, deepening our devotion. And it is something that Maharaj, Satchinanda Maharaj, has been speaking about in his classes. And a few days after I gave this class, even though it struck me so deeply, this purport, I couldn't remember where it was. But I remembered one thing only. And that one thing wasn't the thing exactly, but it was a word from the purport, and the word was piteously. So I decided that I would have to find piteously that word if I wanted to find that purport that very deeply touched me. So what did I do? I opened up my computer and I typed in piteously. And lo and behold, there were 9 examples of piteously and 1 of pitifully. And then as I looked through these 9 examples and the 10th example of pitifully, I did find the exact quotation that I was looking for. And that will be the first one I read, well, that we'll read now. But I also found that the other 9 examples were so interesting. And each one of those unfolded a story, it unfolded something that was so valuable for me in my Krishna consciousness. And then I understood something, and of course I talk about it so often, and I preach about it so often, I teach about it so often, but this reminded me how valuable Prabhupada's books are as a mine of jewels that we have to acquire one after another to make our great wealth and take care of them very carefully so that we can become spiritual billionaires. These books are a mine of jewels, spiritual, valuable instructions, examples. And if we just approach them in any way, even in this particular perhaps peculiar way that I happen to approach it, to find piteously, no matter how we approach it, whether we read very analytically, or we read in a prayerful way a little bit at a time, or we pick out one word such as piteously in folio and look through it, if we just associate with Srila Prabhupada through his books, and if we do it carefully, we will be able to gather some jewels that will be very valuable for us. And then, one by one, especially if we apply these principles to our life and try to assimilate them deeply, then we will become very wealthy spiritually quite rapidly. I would like to read the one quotation that set me out on this particular... before that, we might as well let everyone read them at the same time. So, Adi Purush Prabhu was going to hand out a sheet that has all 10 of the different quotations about piteously that we have found. And what I would suggest is don't start reading it or you can look through it quickly if you like. And when everyone has one, then I'll start reading in a particular place. Raise your hand if you still don't have one. One more required. Could look on. Anyone who doesn't have one, raise your hand. Okay, we need two more. Okay. Now, the original hideously quotation that struck me was this first one, but we won't read the whole purport, which is Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavatam 1.10.30. This purport has to do with that chapter has to do with Krishna's leaving Hastinapura after the battle of Kurukshetra. I'll read the verse and then we'll start reading from the purport about two-thirds of the way down. So you can follow along with the verse. You can just read along with me mentally. And the children of these ladies were Pradyumna. They're speaking about this is the ladies, I believe, who are on the roofs of the palaces of Hastinapura as Krishna is leaving Hastinapura to go to Dwarka. And these ladies are describing the good fortune of the queens of Krishna who live in what city? In Dwarka, yes. The children of these ladies, the queens, Mataji, now. Thank you. The children of these ladies are Pradyumna, Samba, Amba, etc. Ladies like Rukmini, Satyabhauma, and Jambavati were forcibly taken away by him, Krishna, from their Swayamvara ceremonies after he defeated many powerful kings headed by Sisupal. And other ladies were also forcibly taken away by him after he killed Bhaumasura and thousands of his assistants. All of these ladies are glorious. Now, reading from Prabhupada's purport, in the first half of the purport, keep going, he describes how Rukmini Devi was taken away by Krishna. Such a wonderful pastime. She had written a letter to Krishna, begging Krishna to come and take her just before her marriage to Sisupal. And then Prabhupada explains about the others of 16,100 wives of Krishna. So he says, Prabhupada explains, there were 16,100 beautiful girls who were daughters of many kings and were forcibly stolen by Bhaumasura, who kept them captive for his carnal desires. These girls prayed piteously to Lord Krishna for their deliverance. And the merciful Lord, called by their fervent prayer, released them all by fighting and killing Bhaumasura. All these captive princesses were then accepted by the Lord as his wives, although in the estimation of society, they were all fallen girls. The all-powerful Lord Krishna accepted the humble prayers of these girls and married them with the adoration of queens. We'll just stop there. That one line will start. You can start again. That one line, these girls prayed piteously to Lord Krishna for their deliverance. And the merciful Lord, called by their fervent prayer, released them all by fighting and killing Bhaumasura. They prayed piteously. That's what struck me. That's what had struck me. And Krishna reciprocated. What does piteously mean again? In such a way that it evoked the compassion of Krishna. They were in such a difficult circumstance. They were princesses. A princess has a spirit. And they were held captive by this horrible Bhaumasura. And he was exploiting them. And they had nowhere to turn. And they turned to Krishna. And they were praying piteously. And this is exactly what we have been speaking about. Maharaj has been speaking just on this point about our japa. And that's just what I was thinking about when I read this, and it stuck in my mind, and I was looking for it, because this was a direct instruction, or rather an indirect instruction, by Srila Prabhupada, how I should be chanting, how I should be praying. And it was right there. We can look, we go to so many other books and so everywhere, and we feel that we need something for our advancement that's so far away. But actually, it was right here. To pray piteously in such a way that compassion was evoked by Krishna. That was the first example of piteously. And in that, there is a wonderful jewel that we've been speaking about. But let's go on to the second example, which is quite different. This has to do with Maharaj Bharata, who had renounced his kingdom. And then, even though he was just before Prema Bhakti, he developed an attachment. And he was a Kshatriya. Now what happened is that he was in, what ashram was it? Does anyone remember? The ashram, I believe it is of Pulaha. Pulaha. Do you know, have you been there?
It is extremely remote.
Very remote.
Yeah, in the sea.
But then, there was a lion that roared. And he was a warrior, a Kshatriya, so the lion's roar didn't disturb him. But at the same time, there was a deer who was pregnant, who was drinking water, and the deer became terrified. And that caused a miscarriage. And that little baby deer, the mother, ran away and died. And that little baby deer was floating down those crystal, clear, cold waters of the river, the Gandaki, which meant certain death for the deer. And there was Maharaj Bharata, renounced everything, but there was some spirit in his heart of being a Kshatriya. And Kshatriyas, what's in their heart is they give protection. They cannot stand to see exploitation. They give protection. And here was a baby deer was going to die, and he decided to protect it, save it and protect it. And he took care of it. And when one takes care of something, one feels ownership over it. And then once one has ownership over something material, if it is out of one's sight, one feels lamentation and that one is missing it. So, piteously comes up here, although Prabhupada puts it in parentheses. If Bharat Maharaj sometimes could not see the deer, his mind would be very agitated. He would become like a miser who, having obtained some riches, had lost them and had then become unhappy. When the deer was gone, he would be filled with anxiety and would lament piteously due to separation. Thus he would become illusioned and he would speak as follows. So then there are more verses that describe that. But just see what happens if we become attached to something material. Even though, who could turn their back on something like this? If there was a creature in distress like that, who would not save it? But yet, it was the cause of so much trouble for Maharaj Bharat, because his heart went towards it, because he felt ownership of it, identification with it. And therefore, he had to lament. But this piteously, this lamentation is so different from the lamentation and piteous mood of the queens who called to Krishna piteously to evoke his compassion. And Maharaj Bharat's piteousness, which would evoke, he was so disturbed by this that everyone's compassion would also be evoked. But it was the cause of future births for him. There's a warning in this for us. Don't become attached and think that material things are ours and have possessiveness over them. Not that we can't do this. We certainly can do it and we tend to do it. But we should know that if we do it, become attached to anything in the material world, we shall lament. We shall lament. So it is in our own interest. And this was the last thing you read in the last night after the kirtan, that we have to be able to deal with the material world very neutrally. Not aversion, but neutrally. So that we don't develop ownership, and that is called Yukta Vairagya. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach. Deal with the world neutrally. If we start thinking that this is mine in the material world, whatever it is, we shall lament by Krishna's mercy. Another jewel, another reminder. But how many times I had probably read that first canto sequence describing about the queens tens and tens of times before, but it was only this one time that it really struck me what it meant to pray piteously. So we should read very carefully and prayerfully if we actually want to get the jewels that are there waiting for us and apply it. Another point very important to apply. Let's go on to the third one. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, O son of Mother Uttara," who is he speaking to? Sukadeva Goswami? Prikit Maharaj. "There were some waves of dissatisfaction in the mind of Jad Bharat due to his being insulted by King Rahugana, who made him carry his palanquin. But Jad Bharat neglected this, and his heart again became calm and quiet like an ocean. Although King Rahugana had insulted him, he was a great Paramhansa. Being a Vaishnava, he was naturally very kind-hearted, and therefore he told the king about the constitutional position of the soul. He then forgot the insult because King Rahugana pitifully begged pardon at his lotus feet. After this, He began to wander all over the earth just as before. So we are familiar with this pastime, how this great Judd Bharat, in his two lives ago, he was that Maharaj Bharat, and then he became a deer, and then in that, the third life, he became Judd Bharat. And Judda means, what does Judda mean? Like a stone, or inanimate, or unconscious. So he had Krishna consciousness burning in his heart, but he had made a decision that I'm not going to become attached to anything in the material world. Why did he make this decision? Because as Bharat Maharaj, he had suffered so much because of the attachment that he had gotten to that deer. So he decided, I'm not going to interact with the material world at all. And he acted as if he was a retarded, mentally challenged madman. And he refused to learn anything his father taught him. He would do everything wrong because he didn't want to deal with the material world. He was wrapped in meditation inside upon Krishna. So one day, after his Judd Bharat life was going on, he was walking, and he was a very strong fellow. And a king needed a palanquin carrier. And if you've ever seen, did anyone ever see a palanquin being carried? You see that at Barshana, you see that at Jagannath Puri. It's actually very, very difficult work. And you have to walk in harmony with the other palanquin carriers. Because if one is walking one way and another is walking that way, the person who's being carried is rocked back and forth, and it's very uncomfortable. So one needs to be coordinated. So Judd Bharat, he refused to do it because that would mean sometimes he would cause pain to living entities and step on an ant. He refused to do that. So the palanquin was rocking, and the king became disturbed to him, and he began to insult him so heavily. You are a madman. I'm going to beat you, you fool, you rascal. Can't you do anything properly? Judd Bharat, interestingly, as this verse said, he felt the words of the king pierce his heart, but he neglected it. There's an instruction right there that if we wish to be serious about our spiritual life and keep our mind equipoised, we have to neglect so many of the causes of disturbance in this world, because the world is meant to disturb us. It's meant to push us to Krishna. We have to neglect these things to keep the mind peaceful, to focus on Krishna. But he was insulted, and that was terrible for King Rahugana. But King Rahugana removed the offense. How? He pitifully begged pardon at Judd Bharat's lotus feet. What is a synonym for the word pitifully? Piteously, yes. But what in what way did he do it? Plaintively, pleadingly. What other words? He was feeling ashamed. He felt terrible. He understood, just if we take the word pitifully and understand his mood, he felt ashamed. He felt fearful. Why was he afraid? Because if one insults an exalted devotee, one's spiritual life is finished. One will lose everything. He was terrified. And there is nothing like genuine terror to make us sincere in our requests. So very, very sincerely, in his shame, in his fear of what's going to happen to him, he had that piety. He begged, a king to beg. When Bhima was traveling in the Himalayan mountains to bring the 1,000-petal lotus for Draupadi. He went to the lake. Was it the Manasarov? Or he found a lake that had all these lotus petals, lotus flowers, and he went to take one, and all the soldiers of Kuvera were there, and they said, these lotus flowers belong to Kuvera. You cannot take them without position, without permission. If you want them, you have to ask Kuvera for them. And there was an army there. And Bhim, who was such a Kshatriya, he looked at them and said, I am a Kshatriya. I don't beg from anyone. I'll take them. And if you want to stop me, just try. And he did just that. He took the lotus flowers, and they tried to stop him, and he killed them all. This is the mood of a Kshatriya. I don't beg from anyone. This Maharaj Rahugana was terrified of the offense that he had committed, and it caused him to beg, break his whole mood of a Kshatriya, all his Kshatriya pride, culture of a Kshatriya, all finished. And if we have committed offenses, we have to be in this mood, very, very, very sincere. Let's go on to the next one. Pitifully. There are so many jewels and gems in Prabhupada's books. He worked so hard. Asking the devotees to distribute them and to read them. This is why. Number four. Thereafter, all the women whose husbands had fallen in the battle, headed by Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, came out of Lanka. Continuously crying, they approached the dead bodies of Ravana and the other Rakshasas, striking their breasts in affliction because their husbands had been killed by the arrows of Lakshman. The women embraced their respective husbands and cried piteously in voices appealing to everyone. My Lord, O Master, you epitomize trouble for others, and therefore you are called Ravan. But now that you have been defeated, we are also defeated. For without you, the state of Lanka has been conquered by the enemy. To whom will we go? To whom will it go for shelter? So, many things about this simple verse. If we take shelter again of any material person, even if he is as powerful as Ravana is, we will end up lamenting and crying piteously. But there is something else that I found when I read this. I thought that they are teaching us, and there'll be more instructions in this way, of what it means to pray piteously. Listen to their words. We are also defeated. Appealing voices, piteously in voices that appeal to everyone. You have, now that you have been defeated, we are also defeated. That means, as they explain, we have no place to go for shelter. And this is what will cause us to pray piteously and powerfully to Krishna when we feel that we have no other shelter. If we think that we have a shelter in the material world or anywhere else, how will we have the shelterlessness feeling of, what can I do unless you give mercy to me? I have nothing. I am nowhere. I'm completely defeated. Such sincerity. And that also shows us how Krishna can instruct us anywhere, through anything. Even through the relationship that someone may have with Ravana. Because it's a true relationship. Because truth, anything true, is meant for Krishna. Without you, O Krishna, without your mercy, I am completely defeated. Where will be my shelter if you don't become kind to me? Number five. Once, when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. And then it must be the next verse. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow. Very much distressed, she cried piteously. With tears in her eyes, she appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma, with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the demigods, approached the shore of the ocean of milk. She was crying piteously. Tears were in her eyes due to her distress. And therefore, she captured the attention of Lord Brahma and the other demigods to assist her in her need, in her request, in her distress. Tears, so sincerely she was crying, she was feeling this distress. Next one, number six. Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa. We all know this pastime. She piteously appealed to Kamsa. My dear brother, all good fortune to you. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. My dear brother, by the influence of destiny, you have already killed many babies, each of them as bright and beautiful as fire. But kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift. My lord, my brother, I am very poor, bereft of all my children, but still I am your younger sister. And therefore, it would be worthy of you to give me this last child as a gift. Sukadev Goswami continued, piteously embracing her daughter and crying. Devaki begged Kamsa for the child. But he was so cruel that he chastised her and forcibly snatched the child from her hands, having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense selfishness. Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. Appealing piteously to a demonic person who will not help her. We have to take our piteous appeals and place them in the right place. And interesting, there's an interesting definition of what made this person, Kamsa's heart, so hard. How could he do that? There was a newborn baby child, and he was so powerful, and his sister, his own sister, was begging him, spare this child, you've killed so many. And it was a boy who was going, the prophecy said, and this is a girl, spare her, spare her, spare her. How hard-hearted this man was. He tried to kill that child in such a way, in front of the mother. And begging, he was going to just... don't try to imagine it, but... don't try to imagine what it would look like. Just, in front of... And what is the cause of this person's incredible hardness... intense selfishness. And this is what the material world is doing to everyone. Even 50 years ago, people were dutiful. But now, intense selfishness, immediate gratification is the only thing that is considered. No duty even. Duty means actions just because it's the right thing to be done. And therefore, families ruined. Never mind the children come out hurt, maimed, scarred by all the divorces. Never mind, this is not good for my pleasure and it's too disturbing for one reason or another. Just simply selfish. And the children always must feel this is a rejection. The crime, the thievery, the killing, just selfishness. Petty, personal, and extended. Communities killing each other, hatred, intense selfishness. It's the making of a demon. So we have to be careful where we place our piteous appeals. Krishna is, hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu. Hey Krishna, please, everyone. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute. If we could pray that piteously, with full heart and tears in our eyes, we would not be in the material world. All it takes is sincerity, full sincerity. So take this jewel. It is an offering from the Bhagavatam. 7. Now this is, we're going to change pace here. Number 7. This describes a Vrindavan Leela from the Krishna book. No, this is actually, this one's from the Bhagavatam. When the members of the cowherd community who had accepted Krishna as their dearmost friend saw him enveloped in the snake's coils, motionless, they were greatly disturbed. They had offered Krishna everything, their very selves, their families, their wealth, wives, and all pleasures. And at the sight of the Lord, in the clutches of the Kaliya snake, their intelligence became deranged by grief, lamentation, and fear, and thus they fell to the ground. The purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that the cowherd boys, along with some cowherd men and farmers who happened to be in the vicinity and who were also devotees of Krishna, fell to the ground just like trees that had been cut at the root. Why? I'm not reading right this second, but why? They were staring at Krishna, enwrapped in the coils of Kaliya, and had given everything to Krishna. And they fell to the ground like trees. that had been cut at the root. The cows, the bulls, and female calves in great distress called out piteously to Krishna, 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 Krishna. Fixing their eyes on him, they stood still in fear, as if ready to cry, but too shocked to shed tears. In the Vrindavan area, there then arose all three types of fearful omens, the on earth, in the sky, and those in the bodies of living creatures, which announced imminent danger. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the omens were as follows. On the earth there were disturbing tremors. In the sky there were meteors falling. And in the body of creatures there was shivering, as well as quivering of the left eye and other parts of the body. These omens announce imminent danger. Seeing the inauspicious omens, Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men were fearful, for that they knew that Krishna had gone to herd the cows that day without his elder brother Balaram. Because they had dedicated their minds to Krishna, accepting him as their very life, they were unaware of his great power and opulence. Thus, they concluded that the inauspicious omens indicated that he had met with death, and they were overwhelmed with grief, lamentation, and fear. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the children, women, and elderly persons, thought of Krishna just as a cow thinks of her helpless young calf. And thus these poor suffering people rushed out of the village intent on finding him. The Supreme Lord Balaram, the master of all transcendental knowledge, smiled and said nothing when he saw the residents of Vrindavan in such distress, since he understood the extraordinary power of his younger brother. The purport. Sri Balaram is the plenary expansion of Lord Krishna and is thus none different from him. They are, in fact, the same absolute truth manifest in separate forms. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Balaram was laughing because he thought, Krishna never cares to play with me in my form of Sheshanaga, but now he is playing with this ordinary mundane snake named Kaliya. Look at that. Look at this pastime, what Krishna has arranged. He has... Well, Krishna's Leela Shakti, we can say, but it is Krishna's arrangement. He has himself enwrapped in such a dangerous position. He knows the love that the residents of Vrindavan feel about him, and there he has put himself in such a dangerous position, and they're all just on the bank of the river, Jamuna, and staring at him. Mother Yasoda tries to enter the water to save her son, and all the her lady friends pull her back. And what does she do? She faints. She can't remain conscious and see her son in this condition. Like Mother Sachi, we heard how Mother Sachi couldn't, she knew that Mahaprabhu's body was made of, was transcendental, and he was in ecstatic trance, but she couldn't tolerate to see that body falling to the ground in ecstasy. So therefore, she became unconscious, in trance. Mother Yasoda was unconscious, and the only way that she maintained her life, that she didn't die to see the precarious position that her son was in, was that the other ladies were telling her in her ear the pastimes of Krishna. And therefore she maintained her life. This is the absorption. This is the absorption that the residents of Vrindavan had. They had nothing other than him. They fell down to see Krishna in distress, not to see their own trouble and distress, but to see Krishna's distress. They fell down like trees cut at the root. Even the cows, the bulls, and the female calves in great distress, they called out, cows, calling out piteously to Krishna. The blades of grass, everything in Vrindavan is conscious. All piteously calling out to Krishna. Because Krishna was all the only thing of value to them. This is Vrindavan consciousness. So perhaps we don't have the spiritual wealth to be spiritual billionaires at this point, that a whole existence is focused with love on one object and one object only, Krishna. But here's the process. Meditate on this, of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. They only saw him. And in this pastime also, the gopis too, the young gopis were also allowed to simply stare at Krishna, because everyone was simply staring at Krishna, terrified, calling out piteously, Krishna, 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 teaching us how to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, to pray, and understand the great price that it is. It's total, it's everything. There's two more. The next one, the eighth one, is a long one, so I'm not going to read it all. It's got to do with Rukmini. After she is kidnapped by Krishna, Rukmi comes charging after her older brother and starts chastising Krishna. And what she calls him, what he calls her, wherever you go, Krishna, carrying off my sister like a crow stealing sacrificial butter, I will follow. This very day I shall relieve you of your false pride, you fool, you deceiver, you cheater in battle. Release the girl before you are struck dead by my arrows and made to lie down. In response to this, Lord Krishna smiled. And with six arrows he struck Rukmi and broke his bow. The Lord struck Rukmi's four horses with eight arrows, his chariot driver with two, his chariot driver flag with three. And anyway, he completely defeated Rukmi. And he then was going to kill him. But this was Rukmini's brother, and this was the day of their marriage. So Rukmini fell at her husband's feet and piteously spoke as follows. O controller of all mystic power, O immeasurable one, Lord of lords, master of the universe, O all auspicious and mighty arm one, please do not kill my brother. Now listen to the symptoms that are described of Rukmini. This is piteously asking. This is how she was focused. Rukmini's utter fear caused her limbs to tremble and her mouth to dry up. If we could chant like this. While her throat choked up out of sorrow. If we could chant like that. Oh, Krishna, I've been chanting for 32 years. Should I not be sorrowful? And look at my pitiful condition. She grasped Krishna's feet. What a meditation. And the Lord, feeling compassionate. Oh, in her agitation, her goldless necklace scattered. She grasped Krishna's feet. And how did Krishna respond? Feeling compassionate, he desisted. He stopped killing her brother. So this pastime is wonderful. There's so many instructions in it. But let us go to the ninth one. Also in Vrindavan. One day, shortly after the ceremony, when Mother Yasoda was patting her baby on the ground, who was the baby? That was Krishna. The baby felt too heavy, and being unable to carry him, she unwillingly placed him on the ground. Just note that word, unwillingly, even. She wanted to keep holding him. After a while, she became engaged in household affairs. At that time, a servant of Kamsa, known as Trinavarta, as instructed by Kamsa, appeared there in the shape of a whirlwind. He picked up the child on his shoulders and raised a great dust storm all over Vrindavan, covering everyone's eyes. Within a few moments, the whole area of Vrindavan became so densely dark that no one could see himself or anyone else. During this great catastrophe, Mother Yasoda could not see her baby, who was taken away by the whirlwind, and she began to cry very piteously. She fell down on the ground, exactly like a cow who has just lost her calf. When Mother Yasoda was so piteously crying, all the cowherd women immediately came and began to look for the baby, but they were disappointed and could not find him. We'll stop there. Everything, her whole consciousness, was centered on this one baby, Krishna. Sunyayetam jagatsarvam govinda virahename. A moment's separation feels like yugas and yugas and yugas. Crying fiercely. Oh, that's what happened to Trinavarta. Later, he cries fiercely. But this, for making Yasoda Mata cry in her ecstasy. She cried piteously and she fell down on the ground. She couldn't even stay standing. Fell to the ground like a cow who has lost the calf. And this indirectly brings up the suffering that these demonic people, hard-hearted demonic people, are doing in this world. What they do to these animals is utterly disgraceful, because the cow experiences such suffering when separated from the calf. And Mother Yasoda, having the softest of hearts, fell to the ground and she was crying piteously. So loudly that all the neighbors heard it and came looking. What happened? Why? What's disturbed you so much? Where's your boy? Where's your boy? And she was just crying piteously, piteously. So we can get a glimpse of what Vrindavan is. And this last one is a real unique one. It's right out of the Nectar Devotion, but there's an editing mistake in it. But I'll read it as it is. There is a statement in the Vidugdha Madhava wherein Srimati Radharani, in an angry mood, addressed her mother, Purnamasi, after she had accused Radharani of going to Krishna. So it's most probably mother-in-law Jatila and misunderstood in the typing. So Radharani said, "My dear mother," Radha declared, "what can I say to you? Krishna is so cruel that he often attacks me on the street. And if I want to cry out very loudly, this boy with a peacock feather on his head immediately covers my face so that I cannot cry. And if I want to go away from the scene because I'm afraid of him, he will immediately spread his arms to block my path. If I piteously fall down at his feet, then this enemy of the Maru demon, in an angry mood, bites my face. Mother, just try to understand my situation, and don't be unnecessarily angry with me. Instead, please tell me how I can save myself from these terrible attacks of Krishna." So we pray that these wonderful words of Srimati Radharani bless us. Okay, it's exactly 11 o'clock. Take 10 minutes to write, or rather take a 10-minute break, and then 10 minutes to write, and then at 20 after we'll begin again. 10 minutes to break, and then 10 minutes to write, and then at 20 after we'll meet again.